Yes, people, it is time for Echo Chamber. And as we do of late, we've got a two-parter for you. Woo! Part two came through late. Thanks to Amy Prenner, you know what I mean? But in part one, we got five films, right? What have we got? We have Accursed Man, Shutterbugs, Electric State, right? In the Lost Land, and Locked. So, five very different films to delve into. Well, four films and one documentary. So, people, let's get it popping. Okay, people, so now we're going to look at In the Lost Land. Okay, so In the Lost Land, just back from a screening. I mean, I will be honest, it was just because it was the latest film showing. And I figured, oh, well, let's just try it out. It is the new film from Paul W.S. Anderson, written by Constantine Werner. Now, I do believe that Werner and Anderson, in some places it says that they both wrote it, but in other places they're like, they both came up with the story. So I'm not quite sure. But I do think Werner wrote the screenplay for the most part. Right. The film is produced by Mila Jovovich, Jeremy Bolt, Dave Bautista, Paul W.S. Anderson, Robert Kulzer, Jonathan Meisner, Constantine Werner, executive produced by Richard S. Wright, Martin Moskovich, Christoph Hykak, Kevin D. Forrester, Kirk D'Amico, Nico Brunzima. It is associate produced by Irina Copley and Stuart Williams, with line production from Christoph Solek and Udo Happel. Okie dokie. Paul Haslinger took care of the music. Glenn McPherson, cinematography. It's edited up by Niven Howie. Carolina Kosiba and Susan Smith handled the casting. Production design is Lucas Trzniski, Michael Dera, and Jacek Rekowalsz were art direction. Costume design is Milena Charasek. Just butchering names, people. Whew. Okay, so our cast. We have got Grey Alice, played by Mila Jovovich. Boyce, played by Dave Bautista. The Enforcer, played by Arlie Jover. The Queen is played by Amara Okereke. The Overlord is played by Jayek Drizwez. We have got Janet Jarrus, right? The Queen's right-hand man, played by Simon Loff. The Patriarch, played by Fraser James. Mara, played by Deirdre Mullins. Ross,
played by Sebastian Stanwich. The Hammer, played by Tu Landin. The Old Woman, played by Evelyn Hall. The Midwife, played by Camilla Klamut. Who else do we have? Kane, played by Nicholas Stone. And that's a lot of the people. Yeah, I think that's our main lot, right? So, the gist of the story. A queen desperate to find happiness in love takes a daring step. She sends the powerful and fearful witch Grey Alice to the Lost Lands to give her the magical gift of turning into a werewolf with the mysterious Hunter Boyce, who supports her in the fight against dark creatures and merciless enemies. Grey Alice roams an eerie and dangerous world, and only she knows that every wish she grants has unimaginable consequences. Yeah. That's not really what this film was. Because it's like a queen desperate for happiness in love. That's not really what we saw. What we saw was a queen maneuvering for power. Right? That's really what it was. You know? And everything else, like, oh, only Grey Alice knew that her wishes would... No, but she told everyone. You know what I mean? Like, I've got to grant any request, but it comes with consequences. You know what I mean? So it's just like, everyone knows. It's a bizarre one, right? It is an adaptation of George R.R. Martin's short story, right, In the Lost Lands. I'm not sure if this was part of his Wild Cards universe. Wild Cards? I think it's Wild... That's what it's called. Yeah, I believe so. Now, what I do wonder, though, because George R.R. Martin was very much one to speak up about the changes in Game of Thrones and, you know, the other adaptations HBO are doing, and whether they were done well or badly. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to talk. He's going to talk on it. So I'm curious to know what he thought of this film, because it is not the quality of Game of Thrones. Let's just say that. It's not that quality. It is... Because it starts off, right, it's all kind of misty, and then this figure comes out of the mist. It's Dave Bautista, and it's just like, oh, I'm going to tell you a tale of how I met Grey Alice and how she saved us both. And you're just like, oh, no. Right, it was just bad. It was bad. And then we've got this woman, right? Now, it's Mila Djokovic. We know it's Mila Djokovic. She's hanging, right? She's got rope round her neck. She's standing on some wood. And she's surrounded by people. Now, anyway, right, this whole sequence, and it's just like, oh, look, she can escape, and she kills most of the bad people. It's just like, yeah, look how much of a badass she is. Yeah. Like, Mila Djokovic, she's only really in Paul W.S. Anderson films. Right? Like, you don't really see her in a lot of stuff from other people. Which is very... It's an odd one, right? It's a real odd situation. Because, like, we've seen her actually act. We've seen her actually act and be decent. But she then also has just been terrible in so many things. And Paul S.W. Anderson has made some horrendous films. Horrendous films like Pompeii. Oh, Death Race 2000. The Resident Evil films. Like the first one doesn't start too badly. You know what I mean? Doesn't start too badly. And then it just, it ends like, ugh. But the problem with Paul S.W. Anderson, he also directed Event Horizon, which was tremendous. Now, supposedly, it did not do well in the cinema. It didn't do well in the cinema at all. But, man, it's an incredible film. So, on paper, when you look at who's in this film, it should be good. I mean, it should be decent anyway, right? You should be like, all right, that was fun. That was passable. But you come out like, this was so generic. It was so generic. It was insanity. Right? Just like the names were terrible. Grey Alice, Boyce, the Overlord, the Patriarch. It's just, this, it feels like something AI would write and make. Right? Because it's, you know, flicking through the internet going, oh, what are terms used in, you know, generic sci-fi, like fantasy films. Oh, and it just pulls all of those out, right? Even on the map, the names of all the places they were going to, just generic. Like, the film had no soul. Aesthetically, right, that superficial layer of the film, on this, you know, the first glance, it works, right? It does have that kind of a post-apocalyptic Western feel to it, you know, and there's some good shots, like there's one, the moon coming from behind clouds, you know, this close-up of the rifle and the holster, and there's some decent shots. But then, when you just drill down slightly, it's just, ugh, right? Like, everyone's got good teeth. You know, it starts off going that, oh, the remains of humanity live in this one little place, and you know, it's not the best of existences. If it's not the best of existences, if it's so bad, so crazy, people are so poor, they're not going to have good fucking teeth. Not going to have good teeth. They're not going to have good clothes, right? But when you consider all the fights, like riding through dusty lands, Grey Alice and Boyce's clothes aren't ripped up, aren't dirty. You're just like, wait, this makes absolutely no sense. There's no blood stains, there's nothing. nothing. And you're just like, huh? What are you doing? You know, so that's bonkers. Just the story, like the plot, is throughout, she's just like, oh, Grey Alice is, oh, I've got to say yes to every wish asked of me. And she's saying it to Boyce all the time. And at no point he's like, but why though? Right? This, the logical response is why? She's like, I'm cursed. Why are you cursed? Right? That's a conversation. Those are the logical things you would ask. And doesn't follow that. Doesn't follow that. You know, we've got Djokovic outrun a train. Which is like, you ain't outrunning a train. What are we doing? We ain't outrunning a train, man. You know, she's a witch. And there's bits where, you know, we only see one type of magic. And then suddenly she uses different magic. And you're just like, why didn't you just do that shit from the beginning? Like, huh? And the beat, like, they do this whole reveal thing towards the end. And it's just... this is not a great film, unfortunately. Unfortunately, you know. I kind of feel, though, if you enjoyed... if you enjoyed stuff like Solomon Kane, right? If you enjoyed stuff like the Sam Worthington Clash of the Titans and its dreadful sequel, right? If those are your jam, if those are the kind of fantasy films that you do find fun, right? If you liked, what was it, that Vin Diesel film, the Witch Hunter, something like that, right? If you like those films, then in the Lost Lands, you'll enjoy it. It will work for you. But if you see this film, right, and you see it's an adaptation of a George R.R. Martin story, and you're like, oh, I really like those. Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon are really good. It's not on that level, right? Don't be mistaken, people. It's not on that level, okay? So be warned, in the Lost Lands. Okay, people, so now... it is time to take a look at the Electric State. Okay, so the Electric State. This is the new film from directors Anthony and Joe Russo. It is written by Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely. The film is then produced by bum, 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 Mike LaCocca, Patrick Newell, Georgina Pope, Anthony Russo, Joe Russo, Angela Russo Otstut, Benoit Jabert, Thiago da Costa, Chris Castaldi. It is executive produced by Russell Ackerman, Julia Angeline, Jake Oost, Tim Connors, Jeffrey Ford, Jeffrey Haley, Christopher Marcus, Stephen McFeely, Andy Muschietti, Barbara Muschietti, John Schoenfelder, Simon Stallenhag, Nick Van Dyke, associate produced by Andy Watts. It is also co-produced by Murtaza Kafawala, Joseph Mikuki, and Anthony J. Voorhees, with line production from Yoshiko Tanaka, Rakesh Singh, Pranav Sahani. Yep. So then Alan Silvestri took care of the music. Right, Stephen F. Winden is on cinematography. Right, Jeffrey Ford edits the whole damn thing. Right, Sarah Finn, she brought all this cast together. Production design, we have Denise Gassner and Richard L. Johnson. Julian Ashby, Tom Froling, Richard L. Johnson, Lauren Rosenblum, and Sebastian Schroeder all were down with the art direction. Set decoration is Elizabeth Kennan and Charlotte Lee. Michael Crow and Judiana McWoski are costume design. Our cast. Let's get to this crazy talented crew. We have got Christopher, played by Woody Norman. His sister Michelle is played by Millie Bobby Brown. Their mum is played by Anne Russo. Their dad is played by Greg Krumer. Right, we have got Kurt Loder is himself. Cosmo is voiced by Alan Tudyk. Jesse is played by Rashini Edwards. Madeline Vance, by Holly Hunter. Ethan Skate is Stanley Tucci. The documentary narrator is Will Lyman. Milk Matic Girl is Audrey Brockwell. We've got Corporal Carson, played by Camrus Johnson. Science Professor, played by Vince Pisani. Who else do we have? Tuck Watkins is Arthur Meadows. Mr. Peanut is voiced by Woody Harrelson. The Garbage Bot, voiced by Bill Gardell. News Anchor is Merrill Danbridge. Keats is obviously Chris Pratt. Staff Sergeant Stanzik is voiced by Anthony J. Voorhees. Walter Strickland is a drone pilot. Colonel Bradbury, aka the Marshal, is Giancarlo Esposito. Joe Avena is President Clinton. Farah Bedi is played by Nekar Zadigan. Jason Alexander is Ted, right? That is Michelle's stepdad, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's what you would say. Mr. Blinsky is Marion Hinkle. Ki Hu Kwan is Dr. Amherst. Who else do we have? Coleman Domingo is Wolf. Anthony Mackie is Herman. Ilana Skate is played by Antoinette LaVecchia. Miles Watlow is played by Rahul Khalil. I think that's probably most of our people, right? Rob Grodzinski is Blitz. Joe Russo voices Skeevy Bot. Jenny Slate is Penny Powell. Jordan Black is Clem. Brian Cox is Popfly. There's a lot of people voicing all these different bots that are all over the place, right? So what is the electric state all about? That is the big question, right? So, here's the gist. With humans isolated in their VR helmets and a continuing battle against a strange breed of monstrous drones in the wake of a technological meltdown, a teenage girl named Michelle and a robot travel the west coast of the US in search of the girl's missing brother. So this is a reimagined version of 1997, and it is based on a graphic novel of the same name, right, which was created by Simon Stallenhag. That came out in 2018. So I didn't come across this, you know? So I don't know what the comic was like, you know? I can only judge it from the film. And, I mean, it's vast. And they've tried to create this world with the robots and everything like that, which is, you know, the cast is insane, like the different voice actors and everything, and a lot of people, I'll give you this, right, with the voice acting, a lot of people are actually acting, because that's always a pet peeve, right, with voice work, a lot of times people are just themselves, and so there's no soul to the character, because the people are just being them. You know what I mean? And that's just boring and lazy. But here, people were actually acting, which I respect the fuck out of. The story, I mean, the story's kind of derivative. You know what I mean? There's not a whole lot going on with it. We've seen iterations of this so many times. Right? So many times. And I couldn't really find a USP. Couldn't find a USP of this. Right? And you kind of guessed what was going to happen from the beginning, right? Because we start off and we've got, you know, Michelle and her brother Christopher as younger, earlier versions of themselves, right? And just through those interactions, you're just like, well, obviously that, you know, I mean, this isn't going to last forever. That one's going to bite it. Like, you just know, which is always just a bit like, ah, I want a shock, right? Surprise me. Give me that. But you, as I say, you know really where it's going. And so then we just got all of these different robots and everything like that. Like the Chris Pratt character Keats. You know, we see a clip of him as a soldier earlier on when they're giving you the kind of brief breakdown of how the robots try to, you know, take over. And then they got beat back. So we see Keats early. And then this new, you know, when we catch up with him, it's, I don't know. It's one of those things, right, where, like, they just haven't really done anything with the character. There's like bits and bobs of different things they played all over the place, right? And it's just making them a bit dumb, a bit, you know, flighty, and that's meant to be endearing, but it isn't, because we've seen it too many times, so it just is like dull. It's just like, oh, come on, people. Come on, give me something new, right? Give me something new. We've got Michelle, Keats, you know, they're on this adventure to try and find Christopher. But here's the thing, right? It's we're told that to go across the wall, right? To step into robot country, the exclusion zone, that's dangerous. You can't survive. But then we have them going and surviving. So then it's not really that dangerous. You know what I mean? It's just like, if you're setting something up to be this horrendous place, it's got to be that. Right? Like, do you remember that there's that Black Mirror episode from when the last season Black Mirror is really good, right? And there was those dogs chasing the woman. It was black and white. Oh, my days. That was crazy. Like, if that was the exclusion zone, that, yeah, then there would be peril. Right, and I think this film needed peril, but you've just got all of these different types of robots, some that you kind of feel familiar, like Mr. Peanut Head, you know. So we got some like that, but nothing is like striking fear into you. You know, nothing seems like it's a threat. So you just kind of, you know, our characters are never in peril, right? You know they're going to get through it. It's just that's the problem. It's just like, well, we know how this is going to end. You know? Like, there's no real heart or soul to it. And I imagine, you know, you're acting to a green screen a lot and all of this. Like, Millie Bobby Brown, right? Chris Pratt has done it a lot because of Guardians and Avenger films and all of this kind of thing. I'm not sure, you know, Millie has done it as much. Like, there's a bit when one of the robots grabs her and it's meant to be like, you're fighting, right? You're fighting, you're struggling to get free. But it just kind of had more of a feel of that when someone doesn't want to fight, but they're like, yo, let me at him, let me at him. That's what you got the vibe of. It's just like, ah, come on. You need to put a bit more energy into this for anyone to buy what you're selling. Yeah. That was it. It's like, it's not a terrible, you know, it's not the worst film I've ever seen. You know what I mean? It's definitely not. But it's very forgettable. You know? Once that screen goes black, you're not going to be like, oh, I wonder what that meant. Or, oh man, how crazy was that moment? Oh boy. It's not like that. It did kind of remind me of Player One. Oh my god, was it? Is it that film Ready Player One? Yes, because you have that bit when, you know, they go to fight and you've got like all those different toys and vehicles and stuff, you know, all joining the fray. And at times you're just a bit like, I mean, I don't know. And yeah, I feel Electric State definitely had those vibes. So I think that's probably good comparison. Really, if you really enjoyed Ready Player One, you might dig the Electric State. Yeah, it's a Netflix joint. So if you've got Netflix, and a large chunk of society does, you know, be able to dip in and see what you think, right? I think also, now I haven't been able to get around to watch the director's cuts yet, but it's a little Rebel Mooney, you know what I mean? Because in that you could see potential, right? You could definitely see potential, and they were building this world and the effects were good and all of this stuff. But at times you were just wondering, like, you're not selling me on the emotion. Right now with Rebel Moon, you wondered, oh, well, they cut a lot out, right? So will you get that back in the director's cut? I don't know. In Electric State, this is it. There's not another cut, right? So yeah, if you liked Ready Player One, if you like Rebel Moon, then the Electric State could be for you. So go check it out on Netflix. Okay, so now we are looking at the new thriller, Locked. Okay, so Locked. This is the new film from David Yarovsky. It is written by Michael Arlen Ross. The film is produced by Sean Patrick O'Reilly. Peter Jackal, right? We've talked to him in the past about Medieval. There's Zainab Azizi. Who else do we have? Sam Raimi. It is executive produced by Luke Taylor, Divya Shahani, Michael Rothstein, Eric Reblekin, Majid Nassif, David Koppel, Matthew Helderman, Paul W. Hazen, Samuel Hall, Warren Goz, Daniel Govia, Tyler Gould, Eric Gold, Marty Gillespie, Gaston Duprat, Mariano Cohen, and Martin J. Barab. It is co-produced by Pierre Henry, Trevor Osmond, co-executive produced by Aaron Whitaker, Sabrina Munnick. It is... Who else do we have? And then associate produced by Daniel Charos, with line production from Zach Hagen. Tim Williams took the music. Michael Dalla Torre is on cinematography. Jackie Lind handled all the casting. Right. Production design is Grant Armstrong. Jacqueline Kenny is art direction. Set decoration is Shannon Gottlieb, with Autumn Steed on costume design. Hair, makeup, tattoos. We got Emil Kwivik, Ali Palanovich, Debbie Lelevier, Keith Lau, Selu Dunn, Caroline Denner, Rita Kikokozi, and Alana Biladu, I think. I probably butchered all of that. Our cast. Right, so Eddie Barish is played by Bill Skarsgård. His daughter, Sarah, is played by Ashley Cartwright. Interestingly enough, they don't have his wife listed. William is played by Anthony Hopkins. Carl is played by Michael Eklund. Butter, played by Navid Charki. The lady puts on a lipstick was played by Sophia Tesma. Let me just check somewhere else. They might have the wife listed. Nope, wife is not listed. And we do hear her. He makes a call to her. So that's a little odd, but that's what it is, right? That's what it is. Now, the gist of the story. Let me make this bigger. No, that's not really going to work. You know what? I'll do this one because it's easier to see. Because that's just a little bonkers. Okay. When Eddie breaks into a luxury SUV. Oh, where is it? Breaks in. Wait. Ah! I've just lost where I was. When Eddie breaks into a luxury SUV, he steps into a deadly trap set by William, a self-proclaimed vigilante, delivering his own brand of twisted justice. With no means of escape, Eddie must fight to survive in a ride where escape is an illusion, survival is a nightmare, and justice shifts into high gear. Well, you know, this is actually based upon an Argentine film called 4x4 from Mariano Cohen and Gaston Duprat, right? That came out in 2019, I believe, you know? And our director, David Yarovsky, he's done kind of dark films, right? I think he directed Brightburn, right? That Superman kind of film. Remember? I think... yeah, it came out a few years back. I can't quite remember what. Yeah, I think it was Bright. It was called Brightburn. But he directed that, you know, which wasn't. It was It was definitely an interesting. It was like, what would happen if Superman was kind of done in the real world? If it was. You know, a real kind of look at this thing. So this film, it's interesting. I think from jump, you can see that Anthony Hopkins must have had a blast making it. You know, really like getting full kind of hooked, twisted. Right? Now, the film itself, it's put together really well, right? It looks good. You know, just all of this, the sounds in the SUV and all of that. It works. It's suspenseful. It's definitely suspenseful. Yeah. I thought we got some good emotions from everyone involved. You know, that all worked. There's a couple of things for me though with the film. Firstly, he's trapped in that car for a good few days. I forget how many days. But it's a good few days he's up in that car. Now, if you leave a car running, the battery dies. So I was a bit like, would not that battery be dead by the time we start moving in it? Now, I don't drive, right? I don't own a car. So maybe I'm wrong. But I just know from hearing from people when they're like, fuck, I left my lights on and my car was dead. And you know what I mean? So I was just a bit like, yo, wouldn't the battery be dead? You know? And he only, it seemed like he only peed once. Over a few days, you're only like defecating once. I know about that, right? That car should have just been completely trashed. Yeah. Like, and you would think, if you're looking somewhere in a car and you don't want them to fuck your car up, technically, either throw, I think you'd have to throw some nappies up in there, right? Because a bucket, stuff's still gonna, that stuff could spill, right? So I think the only thing would be is be like, yo, there's some nappies, put one on, otherwise, right? It would have to be that. I mean, in no iteration is this fun. In no iteration. Like, people gonna be shitting in your car, man. Like, there's nothing good about that unless you get down on that, right? That's the only thing. If you get down on that, then you're having a ball. Otherwise, I think we need to rethink this plan, right? I think we need to rethink this plan. Now, also, we've had films where someone is committing a crime, but their intentions are good. I think one of my favorites, and the one that just jumps to mind straight, Anton Fisher. And Anton Fisher is so freaking good. So good. But you are with the dad. Right? You're with the dad, even though he's holding up the fucking hospital. And with this film, you're not really with William. You know? We're not really with William. And I think for the film to really work, we need to be either, right? Because it can go either way, but we need to be either with William or Eddie. You know? And I think it probably works better if you're with William. It's hard to be with Eddie because from jump, we see he's a piece of shit. You know what I mean? Like, look, he's a petty, as far as we know, right? As far as we know, he's a petty criminal. So he's breaking into people's shit. And that's scummy, right? You see a laptop in someone, you steal that laptop. But you don't know what that means to that person you're stealing it from. You're like, oh, well, they've got stuff, right? You're stealing their laptop. Maybe they had to work so hard to save up for that laptop, right? That laptop is the thing that is helping them go to school, right? Or just work. So without that laptop, now their life is just fucked. Right? You've destroyed their life. That's what it is. You know what I mean? So, although, you know, he's not killing people or things like that, he's a piece of shit. Right? So he's stealing. We can see he's not being a great dad. Right? Wasn't a great husband or boyfriend, one of the two, we're not quite sure, but yeah, not doing his thing on that front. So he's a piece of shit, right? He doesn't answer the phone to his kid. Like, what are we doing? So trying to be with Eddie is tough, and the only reason he's in the car is he broke into the car, right? He wanted to rob the car. So, yeah, it's hard to be with Eddie. And so, as I said, it's hard to be with William. So, that does take you out a bit. You have no emotional connection now to anyone in the film. Right? You have no emotional connection. And I think this, for this film to really, really work, that's what you need. That's what you need. Now, maybe I'm just cold-hearted, you know what I mean? Anyone else is watching it and going, I really felt for William. Or, I know what Eddie is going through. I'm with Eddie, right? Maybe some people are doing that. I don't know. For me, yeah, there was nothing. There was no emotional with either of these motherfuckers, right? So we have that. They do the thing of, right? Oh, Eddie, look at Eddie. He's a piece of shit. But he is well read. You know, look, he's quoting Crime and Punishment, right? And it's just a bit like, all right, whatever. But obviously, you know, trying to be like, oh, they you know, he reads, he understands. So he doesn't, you know, because he's trying to equate himself to the lead in Crime and Punishment, which is bonkers, right? It's bonkers. So, yeah, we have that, and we have these long speeches trying to justify people, each of their actions, which doesn't really work. I think if you're trying to secure someone, there'd be other things that you would, I'd say, do, right? You know, and then we don't get what we get. There was a chase bit, right? And all I'm just looking at this and going, obviously, you get up onto the side, right? You get off on the side. You're not in the middle of the road. It was a bit kind of like, even as, you know, a less experienced person, there were certain things that were just obvious to you. You know what I mean? Like, you just thought, well, that's obvious. I'm going to do that. You know? So, yeah, the chase bit was a bit odd. Now, I guess people will just, you know, use the age as a, well, that's why. But I don't know about that. I don't know about that, people. You know? It's, as I said, it's a slickly put together film. But I just, yeah, the emotionally, it's not got you. Right, Eddie might be trapped, but your emotions are running free. Right, they ain't trapped at all. They ain't with no one. And that's a shame. That's a shame. You know, good acting, good production, all of these things. But it just doesn't hold you. For me, anyway. As I said, like, It's kind of like an Anton Fisher. And you can look at things like Buried as well, you know, as a kind of example of the film. Like, if you like how people involved, you know, Skarsgård, Hopkins, you might want to check it out. You know, it hits cinemas on the 21st. That's Friday, people. Friday. So, yeah, a lot. Okay, people, so next up we've got a indie film called Shudderbugs. Okay, so Shudderbugs. Right, this is the new film from Joanna Putnam. Joanna wrote and directed. It is produced by Joanna Brennan Brooks and Jamie Unruh. Eric Elterman took care of the music. Brennan Brooks also is on cinematography. Jamie Unruh edits the piece. Visual effects, we got Dan Bulwark, Dave Conte, and Milton Ladd. Okay, so our cast. Right, now, Joanna Putnam, she plays Samantha Cole. We have got Noah Schulters, played by Brennan Brooks. Yep, they both wear multiple hats for the film. The voice of Pamela is Trisha Merrick. The voice of Jane is Rachel Tyman. Brenda is Liv Roth. Dr. Santos is Ellen B. Williams. We've got Eliza Cole, voiced by Beverly Cole Putman. Okay. Clark is voiced by Joe Barros. Joe, voiced by Jamie Unruh. Willis Cole, played by Douglas V. Putnam. And a young version of Sam, voiced by Ella Ren Elterman. So yeah, you know, it's a close-knit crew up on this one, you know what I mean? Now, the gist of the film, right? Samantha returns to her childhood home when her mother suddenly passes. In place of familiar spaces and memories, Sam finds only it's very weirdly there's no solid background. I hate text on an image, man. So frustrating. Okay, where are we? Sam finds only uneasiness and confusion. Things are missing. The environment seems unnatural, and the neighbor, Noah, is suspiciously obtruse. Isolated with these mysteries, a scavenger hunt her mum had prepared for her upcoming birthday and rising red flags from Noah, Sam wrestles with her sanity and certainties. In her journey to untangle the truth, she finds herself at a dangerous crossroads. How far can she trust instincts that may be clouded by grief, guilt, and desperation? Okay. Now we have a statement from all those involved. It reads, "Shutterbugs was born while quarantining with my parents in my childhood farmhouse in spring of 2020. Our frustrations and confusions during this unprecedented time were tempered by throwing ourselves into an incredible challenge. We'd make our own feature, start to finish. With the scoring pandemic in New York come vast limitations. As our locations, crew, our on-screen talent, and other key elements of traditional filmmaking were stifled, we replaced these pieces with what we did have available. The natural beauty of our isolated environment, time, excessive planning, the three of us, YouTube tutorials, cinephilia, and bugs. Lots of bugs. Shutterbugs is our attempt to capture the psychological experience of a woman unraveling and to portray our mind's abilities to inform and adapt our realities beyond logic and reason, often by necessity. In equal measure, we were drawn to telling a story of grief, the weird ways we wrestle and wrangle it, and the very different ways we learn to live with it in the spaces between childhood and adulthood. Memory and present, imagination and reality live all the versions of who we are and how we may behave in the scariest and most difficult of moments. We hope Shutterbugs may offer a voice in our collective portraits and conversations on isolation and grief." Right, so that was Joanna, Brennan, and Jamie. Right, so there we go. This is the feature debut from Joanna. And you can see what they're trying to do with the film, you know? It starts off with Sam driving to the farmhouse, right? And I think you can see there's a look of tempered emotion, right? Tempered grief on her face. That's probably as much as we get in the film itself, right? I think the displays of emotion, I think, are more like you pull it more from, you know, the like the music of the scene and what's kind of obvious, rather than, you know, actual physical representations of that. You know, like I think there's parts of the film where you think things probably could get defined more, right? Like, she's talking a lot on the phone. I feel it's to her sister. I'm not even sure. But we're only hearing one half of the conversation. Now, when you read the statement, I think that's probably because they couldn't work out how to do it. Being their first film, limited experience, you know, you can kind of understand, right? But I think it would have benefited from hearing both sides, you know? So we have that. And there's secrets in the film, but logically, don't need to be secrets, right? Like, I don't know why someone wouldn't relay. There's a bit of information, you know, and we find it out at the end. And it's just like, why wouldn't you just say that? Like, that makes no sense not to say that thing. You know what I mean? Right? So it's there. And then we get like these assumptions, but it's just like a conversation fixes everything. And even with the grief, right? Because you can understand when you're suffering from grief, there's things that we do that don't necessarily make any sense, right? But I think in the case of a conversation, certain things would still have been said, because it's not out of the realms of, you know, interaction, right? If the questions would be very out there, very bizarre, very far reaching, then, you know, you can get it. But these are simple things, right? Simple things. So it is a little bit odd for me anyway, right? That certain things aren't said straight away when asked. And kind of what the beef is between Sam and Noah, right? Because she does say they hung out as kids, you know, not necessarily best friends, but you'd feel there'd be more cordiality in this initial, you know, reunion, as it were, right? So, yeah, they're the things, like, you know, shot-wise, the film, you know, it looks good, it looks, you know, it works, it's fine, all of that. Right? There's one weird moment of dancing, where obviously the music we are hearing can't be the music she's dancing to, because it doesn't fit, right? The dancing, the actions are too more high tempo than what the song is. So you would just be like, wait, who would be dancing like that to that song? Like, no, that doesn't make any sense, right? So we do have that. There was another thing that happened in the film, right? And you think, oh, that's crazy. but it doesn't go anywhere. Right? There, just something is said and then that's it. And you're just like, no one would leave that. Right? No one would leave that situation like that. Right? If you've worked something out, firstly, you would go. You would go there. Right? You'd keep someone on the string. And then you would just turn up and be like, motherfucker, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, or at least you escalate it. But it's just left, which is kind of bizarre. Right? So in watching, you get it's this girl dealing with the loss of her mum. Right? Thinking, could I have done more? Should I have gone up earlier? Right? Did I call enough? Did I say I love you enough? Did I do all of these things? You know, we can see that in this film. And just looking for answers. Because obviously, right, it has to be more. Right? It has to be something that I couldn't have controlled. So it's not on me. You know what I mean? So we see all of that. Right? I mean, the medical thing was a bit, that you kind of feel that's handled slightly differently. But, you know, with all the things that could have been tweaked, could have been perfected, ironed out, right? It's still decent, right? It's not terrible. It's not a, you know, they didn't shit the bed here, right? Like, all the components kind of work, right? The only thing that is a little bit is the emotion. As I said, the Joanna's attempts to portray the emotion of Sam. And I think Brennan works the best when he's being obtruse, right? Not saying much, very abrupt, right? But when we have him talk more, that's when it's a little bit, like, clunky, you know? But it's our first effort, you know? They made a film with a lack of knowledge, right? Lack of resources. Man, mad props for that, right? Mad props for that, you know? It is dropping at the, it's beginning of next week, right? Beginning of next week, it will hit. I believe it's the 25th, you know? 25th of March. So yeah, all the links are on the website. If you like a psychological drama, right, you like the, you know, the dynamics between families and all of that. Well, people, Shutterbugs may be for you. Well, people, we have a new documentary for you. It is called A Cursed Man. Okay, so A Cursed Man. This is the new film from Liam LaGuiglia. He wrote, directed, he produces it. It's executive produced by him as well. Michael Stephen Robinson's. With location production from Rohit Gandhi and Alejandro Sola Luna. And Nigel Levy is a consulting producer. Cinematography was handled by Blake Horn. Liam also edits the piece. Okay, so the cast. But this is going to be a bit harder because it's not listed. So I'm having to take it out the video itself. All right, let me get rid of that. So we have Carrie Wolf, Griffin Said, Lilith Dorsey, Divine Prince Ty Emeka, Sen Eliza, Dean Radin, PhD, Rohit Gandhi, Tantric Babhaneshawana, Tantric Tara Baba, Hermano Juan, Dr. Michel D'Amico, John J. Kruf, who else is there? There's Mark Miller, Rebecca Wright Hong, Scarlett Said, Kevin Moskrip, Linda Snovak, Michael McLean, Elizabeth Connu, Kevin Patterson, Sherry Patterson, Jamie Nimkos, and yeah. So that is a coven that we see. Okay, so that, yeah, it looks like that's the main lot of people in it. The gist of the whole thing is documentary filmmaker Liam LaGuillier enters the world of witchcraft and the occult, searching for an answer to the question, is magic real? Seeking out some of the world's most powerful dark magic practitioners, LaGuillier asks them to put a curse on him. The consequences of this request force him to question the nature of reality and belief in this dangerous, never-before-seen dark social experiment. So, yes, that is it. Now, when this came to me, right, I thought that it was a feature film, and I thought it was a horror, right? A cursed man. That's what I thought it was. So when I open it up and it's like playing like a doc, I'm like, yo, wait, what is this? And yeah, we hear Liam talk about, you know, this idea he's had from all his years in making documentaries. You know, that he's gone all around the world and there's been this undercurrent of belief in magic. And so he wants to know, is it actually real? Right? And his idea was, the only way he'd know it's real if he had someone place a curse on him. Because if it was something good, how would he know? Which, I don't know, as a premise, that mindset doesn't make any sort of sense, right? Because it's about the ask, you know what I mean? If you want something good, then you'd ask for something specific, right? And if that comes true, then you might go, okay, boom. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, it's all about parameters. But this really does come off as just some entitled bullshit, right? Like crazy things white people do. You know what I mean? And I should, you know, phrase it as crazy white people that are mad comfortable in life, right? So they're just looking for, you know, adventure. Right, looking for something that could be a little bit crazy, you know, so they can be like, oh, we tried this, you know what I mean? It makes no sense whatsoever. And so we see Liam, you know, go around and talk. Like, he's married, right? He tells us at the beginning, he's married. He's got two cats. He's very happy. And it's weird because we have him talking to his wife several times throughout the film. And I don't know, those conversations do come across staged. But, you know, when you're filming and it's just like maybe the first cut doesn't work or the lighting's off, so you have to do it again. So, you know, these things can be definitely tricky, but it's odd because he's telling her, oh yeah, I'm going to do this, but we don't really get a sense of him thinking about the impact on those around him if he does it, right? Which is a little weird. I think another thing is we don't get any benchmarks in place. You know? Like, if you're going to do this, you kind of have to break it all down and be like, okay, so I've never had a night. I've never suffered from nightmares. I get, you know, 8 hours sleep every night. Right, I weigh this, had, you know, health checks done and everything is good. You know, so then, right, you can go, okay, all of these things were good. Like financially, he's set. Work keeps them flowing in. There's no issues on that front. Right? Relationship is good. You know what I mean? Just all of these things. So then if anything adverse happens, you can go, oh, yeah. But towards the end, he talks about this health thing. But the only problem with the health thing is, he's just like, oh, well, yes, because there's a history in the family. Right, so if there's a history in the family of a thing, it doesn't, you know, because it's the crazy way all of this works, right? It doesn't always mean it's passed down to the next person, right? It can jump a generation. It can jump several. And then suddenly it comes again, right? But if there's a history of a thing, then it's not out of the blue that you might be affected by it. So that's not really a indication of a curse, you know? But yeah, that's the only thing on that front that kind of seems to be there. But and it's funny, because the first conversation he has with this coven in LA, and they're like, well, we can do it, but it kind of all depends on what you want done, because it could impact how easy it is to remove the thing. Right. So they talk about that straight away, early. And then later in the film, he's like, so now this has happened. Yeah, I've got to work out how to get it removed. And you're just like, okay, well, you put that in place before you do anything. You know what I mean? Like, you could, okay, so I'm, for whatever reason, I'm looking to get curses put on me. How do I get them lifted? Who do I have to go to? How long will it take? What is needed? So you have all of those things, right? That's what, you know, and it doesn't, I mean, I say it doesn't seem like that was done just because of the way this is filmed. That's why, now, maybe that was done and he's like, for dramatic effect, let's do it like this, you know? But I kind of feel you document every single thing, all the things you're doing. Yeah? Like, there's a bit where he has an accident after getting these curses done. And he's just like, oh my God, this is an indication of, and it's just like, hold on a second. consider what you're doing right now. Like, people have accidents doing that thing all the time. Right? I definitely have had a ton. So that is not an indication of a curse working. You know what I mean? You're just like, wait, what's this motherfucker talking about, man? What are we saying? You know, it's like we hear from a lot of different people, right? A lot of different people. There's practitioners in like New Orleans, LA. We go to India. We go to Mexico. You know, we're all around the place looking at these different kind of concepts and beliefs. You know, and it's interesting, right? The way this is put together is definitely interesting. It's hard to, I don't know, it's hard to really break it down as if it is something that actually does what it says on the tin, because of the limited information given, right? Because it's just like, oh, I'm going to see this person and they do curses. But we don't really know how many curses has this person done. Are they really curses? You know what I mean? We don't know any of that. So everything is just taking people's words for this stuff. Like, he goes to a person in India and they're like, you know, he goes to this place that's meant to be renowned, the home place in India for black magic. And there's one person who is willing to do this thing, put a curse on him. But everyone's just like, we don't really know anything about this guy. It could be dangerous. He could kill you. Right? And he's just like, I'm going to have to think about it because I don't want to put anyone's life in danger. And you're just like, shut up, motherfucker. You're going. Right? Obviously, you're going. But there's things you could do to mitigate the situation. Like, people going armed, have a gun with you. You know what I mean? Like, there's things that you could do, but we don't get told any of this stuff. You know? So that's what makes it difficult, because we're not being shown a full hand. Right? It is smoke and mirrors. Kind of, in a way, you know, we're being told something and that's it, you know. But yeah, it's that full, we get this whole thing. Like, now, surprisingly, it only seems to be 6 months, which, again, not a crazy long time, right? So it's just like, to be, oh, and that's getting it put on and then removed. So I don't know how long exactly he had it on him for. But yeah, 6 months, it's not a long time, right? I think if you tried to do a research paper, people would throw that out. They'd just be like, wait, what? You can't get good data from that? What are you talking about? You know? But yeah, I don't know, like, they talked to some scientists. We don't know what level of science they are, like, how well regarded in the field. You know, do people look at these people as being kooks? We don't know any of that. You know, we just saw, oh, these scientists, they work at this institute. Right? So, yes. It's, as I say, it's an interesting one, right? A curse, man, it's an interesting one. And I think the way you interact with it will probably depend on how open you are to the notion of, you know what I mean? Like, do you believe in this? And how much? Right? So that is the big thing, right? If you really believe in magic and curses and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, then I think you are going to be more open to what Liam is doing. If you don't believe, you're going to be skeptical. You're going to, you know, ask certain questions and be like, wait, why don't we hear about this? Why don't they mention that? Bah, 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 bum. So it's just one of those ones. But, you know, it's there, people. It's going to be dropping on Tuesday the 25th of March, right? On all your favorite platforms. So, yeah, if you want to delve into things, you know, yeah, this could be for you. Oh, I nearly forgot too. We do have a director's statement, right, from Liam. And it says, I once asked a friend who is a staunch non-believer, is anything in anything spiritual, if they would allow someone to put a curse on them to test their belief, the answer was a resounding hell no. And this was the same response I got over and over again when I floated the idea to both believers and non-believers of the supernatural. I was fascinated by the idea and the thought as something of an open-minded skeptic. What's the worst that can happen? At the time, I had no idea just how deep I would go and how I'd find myself not only witnessing often secret magical rituals, but becoming the target of dark magical practices. There were two main challenges of making a film like this. The first was gaining access to open very secretive magical groups and practitioners who are often perceived negatively through films and media. The second challenge was actually finding someone who would be willing to put a curse on me. Overwhelmingly, I was told, that's not what witchcraft is about. But I'm a strong believer in the power of naive enthusiasm, and perhaps with a little divine intervention, we managed to capture some truly unique magical practices from around the world. And personally, I've gained a much deeper respect for the power of spiritual belief, and I doubt you'll find me going looking for a curse again. So yes, that's from Liam. So that might help you decide, is a cursed man for you? Right, as I said, it's out on the 25th. So people, go enjoy A Cursed Man. Okay, so that is it for part one, people. What did you think of the films this week? Have you watched any of them? Are you looking forward to any of them? Do you think I got it wrong on some of them? Let me know, right? And don't forget, we've got part two, where we look at The Stress Is Killing Me and speak to its writer-director, Tom Carroll. Great conversation. I think you're going to love it. So I will see you in part two. Thanks for stopping by part one. Peace.